Project Ignite Sessions, where innovation, technology, and entrepreneurship meet the brightest minds, leaders, and innovators in Colorado, our university ecosystem, and abroad. Welcome back to the Project Ignite Sessions at the intersection of technology, entrepreneurship, and innovation at the University of Denver campus. Today, we have got some amazing guests. We have Luke Johnson, who sits on our student advisory board with Project Ignite. And most importantly, we're interviewing this morning Kanika Roy, who is the CEO of Pipeline, one of our hottest companies here on the University of Denver campus. And not only is she the CEO of this great company, she's also soon to be graduating with her MBA from this fine university. And so we're really excited to have this discussion. So with that, Luke, you want to get us started?
Yeah, sure. So I guess I'd like to hear about kind of the beginning of Pipeline and how you really formed that idea and what kind of drove that innovation on your behalf.
So probably the tipping point for Pipeline was I was on a radio show in November 2015 for Game Changing Women. And it was an entire series. And I was on the radio show on the topic of negotiation and pay. And inevitably, the pay gap came up. And the host asked us if we thought that the pay gap would ever be solved. And I said, I don't think it's going to be solved until we make it an economic issue. Much like if you think about the environmental issue really didn't take flight until we talked about it from an economic perspective. Like when you travel, they ask you not to wash your towels. And it's certainly good for the environment, but it's also cheaper for them, right? So after that radio show, they actually asked me to do a radio show, which I declined, on the topic of the economics of gender equity. And I thought, I can solve this. And that was really the genesis of Pipeline.
That's sweet. It's really cool.
So you've got an interesting background. I think that a lot of times, you know, we always have this debate if entrepreneurs are born or if they, you know, are able to develop the skills of entrepreneurship. You've had an amazing corporate career. I mean, you've worked for some incredible companies at the highest levels like SAP before you came to Daniels. Like, what was your path to becoming an entrepreneur? And were there other things before Pipeline that you started to see the inklings of this entrepreneurial ism in your background?
My dad was an entrepreneur, so that probably had a lot to do with it. And as a little girl, and he was very good at, he wasn't industry specific. So he was incredibly good at finding a gap in the market and being able to raise capital and being able to sell it, right? And have a liquidity event that was pretty profitable. So he was in the wine business. He built two hotels in San Francisco. Then he went into telecom. And then eventually nanotechnology was kind of the last thing he did. But as a little girl, when I was five and he was working on building the Park 55 in San Francisco, I would sit in Mayor Feinstein's office and watch him negotiate with her. And I think just this idea of he was a refugee and being the daughter of a refugee and the daughter of an immigrant and watching his drive and his ability to recreate himself probably spurred that in me really young. And I had my first job when I was eight and negotiated with the local health food store to wear one of those signs out in the plaza in Napa, California, to get more customers coming in. And then I actually did inventory for them. And then when I was in high school, I started my own business organizing women's closets and creating outfits for them. So I probably always had that sort of innately, but also was exposed to it because of my dad.
Skirting child labor laws is always a really good way to become an entrepreneur. So I could definitely see that in your background. That's amazing. When we talk about, you know, the topic of diversity and inclusion and what you're attacking with Pipeline,
yeah.
It's a massive issue.
It is.
And when you look at the opportunity for Pipeline and what you're building today, you know, what really drives you to change and solve this?
That's a good question. Yeah. I mean, I think that's a good question. One of the things I think about, one of the quotes that runs through my head quite a bit, there's a Tony Robbins quote that he says quite frequently that says, success without meaning is the ultimate failure. And I believe that if you are an entrepreneur, you have to really, really care about what you're doing, right? And so, you know, coming up through the corporate world, not only did I have to fight to be paid equitably and fight for equal opportunities, but also I had to fight for that for my team, right? So I think when I think about making that better. I feel like I can also make that better for the women and men who are in the corporate world, but also 40% of households in the United States who have children under the age of 18 are led by women. Women are the main breadwinners in those families, and that's a huge amount of people that you can actually affect with a really good product.
That's really cool. I'd like to, like, the AI, for example, I'd like to talk about Pipeline in general and, like, kind of how you guys actually use AI to really attack that, you know, because obviously those ideas are prevalent and those issues are prevalent.
Yeah.
But it's cool how you guys implement AI because that field is growing like crazy. I'd love to hear about that in general and how you decided to incorporate that into your core business model.
Yeah, so if you step back from the artificial intelligence, which is really cool, what we think about is from a neuroscience, cognitive science perspective is really about changing behavior, right? Which is what my other master's degree is in. And so we think about AI as an easy way to affect behavioral nudges, if you will, right? And quantify them, which is a an easier way to actually get people to move, right? So one of our taglines is unconscious bias meet conscious action. And one of our differentiators is that we don't do external hiring, we do internal hiring, but we really look at how we can create an inclusive environment, right? So whether that's hiring, pay, potential promotion, or performance. And bias actually shows up in all of that, right? So for instance, in hiring, if there is only one woman in your candidate pool, she has statistically no chance of getting the job because bias exists. And we know what those look like. So what we did is actually program into the artificial intelligence how the bias shows up. And then we can actually sort of reverse engineer into, so for instance, if you post a requisition, we can actually surface those candidates that would be a fit for that position internally, and then actually quantify the value of them to that team. And then when you actually get to making an offer, then what we can do is actually tell you what you should pay that person so that you're actually moving toward equal pay. And we quantify the value of that, because all of that, if you just step back and look at it from a pure economics perspective, it all impacts the economy, right? So, yeah. So ultimately, you know, from a diversity inclusion perspective, having a more diverse workforce, and obviously we focus on gender diversity, it actually grows the economic pie. Often there's this debate about this kind of zero-sum game and kind of the fallacy of the fixed economic pie. What gender diversity and any diversity does is actually make that pie bigger for everybody.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. That's really
cool. When you think about Pipeline and you're developing the product, is there any links or lines to things like predictive index or Myers-Briggs or Emergenetics or other types of like analysis that you're incorporating into the platform? Or what's kind of the secret sauce in how you're, you know, making the recommendations from the requisites?
Yeah, that's a good question. We haven't done any of that. Most of it is, so if you're thinking about a candidate, it would be more attributes focused. So for instance, we know like transferable skills, right? So we know that people who work in high traffic restaurants are really good customer service reps because their ability to deal with pressure and deal with it effectively. And so it's high. And so we look at those kinds of things. We haven't done so much of the predictive around leadership or any other type of assessments.
What's been the most exciting elements of becoming an entrepreneur after this career at SAP? And you know, where have some of the pitfalls been? Have you experienced any trials and tribulations yet, or is it too early to tell? Or where are you at?
Yeah, so that's a good question. I mean, the exciting part of it is being able to create something that doesn't currently exist, right? So at least not in this form. And I think also being able to create something that will positively affect people's lives, right? So the whole idea of doing good and making money, that was a really important core part of Pipeline and building the company and the culture within the company and how we deal with our customers and with our partners. There are pitfalls. I would reframe them as opportunities, and they're learning opportunities. And they have, I would say, probably very little to do with your worth and a lot more to do with your resiliency and your ability to persist no matter what. right? So I think for us, finding a good chief marketing officer has certainly been a challenge. And my perspective on that is you have to push forward, you have to network, and you have to ask for help when you need it. And those things, whatever those obstacles are that you face, if you believe you can get through them, you can get through them. And if you believe you can't, you won't.
That's really cool. What does the future look like? What's in the pipeline for Pipeline, I guess?
That's a good question. I mean, you know, one of the things, obviously, our primary focus is working with STEM employers and in tech. That's our number one industry that we work in. And so continuing to grow that and grow that exposure is really important to us. The other things that we're looking at is how we do good beyond our business model. So 1% of founding equity for Pipeline actually went into a nonprofit that will fund other nonprofits that actually eradicate bias. So as we continue to grow, the more good we can do in the world.
So as Pipeline grows, when you look at this organization at scale, how does it impact our early stage companies, and how does it impact our middle market, and then at the macro, like Salesforce and Mark Benioff has been an amazing advocate for diversity and inclusion and gender equity within his company. Like, where do you see the company starting to really have some success, and at scale, what do you envision Pipeline becoming?
So we would view the success as fixing the leaky pipeline that is, that we see, right? So there's a lot of talk about women as CEOs or in the C-suite or on boards, but the issue is if they don't get into the pipeline at the very beginning, they're not going to make it to the top, right? So men are promoted at a rate of 30% greater than women from the very beginning. And it just gets worse because the pool gets smaller. So we would see the ability to fix that. I think our biggest goal when we sort of are, big audacious goal is in 10 years to cut the time for gender equity that the World Economic Forum talks about in half. So right now I think it's at 171 years. We'd like to cut that to 85. When we talk about it at scale, and Mark Benioff is certainly inspiration, and I had the great opportunity to meet him last year in November, and that was amazing, as well as Tony Proffitt, their chief equality officer, who's incredible. And one of the things I think, especially Mark Benioff, has a really key role to play here in Salesforce, is because most CEOs come out of the line. They come out of revenue-generating roles, and to the extent that we can use a platform like Salesforce and their huge broad adoption from small all the way to big businesses, we can actually be able to bend that trend and actually get more women to be CEOs because they can get promoted up the line and then they get into the line of succession and then ultimately they become CEOs. So I think Mark in particular and Salesforce and Tony have a really key role to play in fixing that pipeline as well.
Looking at it from a social perspective. So you guys say that 1% of founding equity goes towards these nonprofits.
Yeah.
Have you guys really delegated a lot of that equity and efforts to the nonprofits to also attack the gender inequality? So I guess have you put money into nonprofits who focus on the same issues that you guys do at its core?
Yeah, we actually made it the mission of the Pipeline's nonprofit is eradicating bias because that would afford us the ability to match those missions at scale, right? So if you look at Pipeline, do we continue to focus on gender equity or do we also incorporate race and ethnicity as its own standalone? I mean, that's certainly a question. I think so we look at that, but I think one of the reasons that we wanted to create the nonprofit is also because there are economic inputs that we can't affect directly with Pipeline. So things like girls' education, right? So there are 130 million girls who are out of school across the globe. And if we can get them into school, we can actually end poverty in one generation. That is the key to ending poverty. And so if we can support nonprofits like Girl Rising or the Malala Fund or Let Girls Learn that actually get girls into school, we can actually also, fix the pipeline farther up the line.
as a leader, you've had an incredible career. You know, how has your own experience been reflective of what you kind of really deem the opportunity? Because, you know, it seems like that you've been able to really not only combat this, but, you know, dominate in some of the fields that you've chosen to be in. What's been your path, and what have been some secrets or kind of tips along the way for other women to, you know, follow in your footsteps?
That's such a good question. I think, you know, as the daughter of a refugee and the daughter of an immigrant, the lessons that I was taught really young were to always do your best and never give up. So when things are hard, you just keep going. You just never give up. And so having those times when I wanted to give up, you just never do, right? And certainly also the believing in yourself, even if people don't believe in you, right? So that idea that sort of never giving up, there certainly have been times in my career where I believed in myself more than anyone else around me. And so that gave me a lot more fight and push to keep moving. And I have also fought for my own equality, right? I mean, I've used the Lilly Ledbetter Act twice to be paid equitably. and one time, it was a really, I mean, it was so blatant. And I was trying to be, you know, cordial and nice and work it out. And finally, I just said to HR, this is a Lilly Ledbetter issue. Every time you pay me, the statute of limitations starts over. So what do you want to do? And I think, you know, telling.
And you kept your job.
I kept my job. Well, because what were they going to do, right? I mean, it was kind of that, like, you have to, at some point, you have to just believe that you can do it. That's amazing. Then other people will believe in you. I mean, I think, and maybe that's an innate thing. Maybe it was watching my dad and his courage. I mean, so much of those stories, right? I mean, I think about my dad, and when he escaped from Hungary in 1956, he escaped with my three oldest sisters. They were 3, 8, and 9 at the time, right? And they had to drug my little sister, who was 3, so that she didn't cry. And that sort of, like, belief that you could make it through is quite remarkable. And I think, you know, seeing that and sort of knowing that, you just push forward. You just have to. And I also felt a pretty deep obligation to the women who worked for me. You know, I believe in the one hand forward, one hand back. So I inherited a lot of teams, you know, throughout my corporate career. And I would always figure out how to advocate for those women to be paid equitably, because inevitably they weren't. And so I'd either go and use Lilly Ledbetter, I would hire someone new, and then that would, you know, enable me to fix the salary that was coming up. I was a pretty big advocate of of schedule flexibility, right? So I had one woman who went on maternity leave for 5 months, and I said, don't worry about it. That's my job as a manager to figure out how we get the work done, right? Or, you know, having more flexibility in the work that you do every day, right? I had one woman who wanted to pick her kids up from school every day, but she was willing to work at night. That's fine. As long as the work gets done, it doesn't matter. So this, I think the more we can create that flexibility, and the more we can advocate for others, it gives them an inspiration to then go and help other people.
When you think about your path as an entrepreneur, a lot of the times we talk about great entrepreneurs are steeped in confidence. They have an overdeveloped ability to take on risk. And the X factor we always talk about is grit. And it sounds like in your background, it sounds like there's this deep story of overcoming incredible odds, yes. Both your dad and your family, but also you personally. What does grit mean to you? And where is it kind of started to play a central role in some of the work you've even done with Pipeline?
Yeah, I would say grit and resilience, right? The willingness to get back up. I sometimes feel like we have this sort of, and I think about with my kids, right? So my kids are 6 and 9, and how I give them grit, because they don't have the experience that I had, right? And I think grit and resilience can be underdeveloped, right? If we don't want to arbitrarily make things hard, but hard things will come because that's part of life. It has nothing to do with your self-worth, right? It's your ability to get back up when you get knocked down and figure out a way through. That's your grit and resilience, not making it about yourself or yeah, I mean, it's just not about you, quite frankly. I mean, that's another core belief that I have. I just don't think it's about you. It's about how you make, how you take what was given to you and make the world a better place. And I think that probably also gives me a lot of grit and resilience as well. It's just not about you.
That's cool. I love that idea of being kind of the object of the movement, as if like someone's actually just using you to really initiate change. How do you guys quantify results? So when you do the work with businesses, how do you measure it after the fact and say that it actually worked, I guess?
Yeah, so we actually project forward. So we'll do, okay, their initial baseline is backward looking, right? Their initial pipeline dashboard. And then based on that, we project forward what the projected outcomes will be. So based on a sample size of 4,000 companies, what we saw at the top level was that by increasing gender equity at 10%, so for every 10% increase in gender equity, there's a 1-2% increase in revenue, right? So that's what we see. And then we can actually quantify when we actually look at how the bias shows up in the system, so hiring and pay, et cetera, then we can actually quantify the money they're leaving on the table and then quantify it looking forward. And it's based on economic models and what they use to quantify it at the aggregate level. And then we drive that down.
Yeah, it's really cool. You guys have this opportunity to be like a company that can almost just create an image for businesses. So, you know, if they're a pipeline affiliate, then it's like they have that status almost. Mm-hmm. That's really cool. How have you done like company acquisition and reach out to them? Has it primarily been on your behalf or has it been word of mouth? I guess scaling in general, how have you moved from company to company and really tried to implement the model there?
From a customer acquisition perspective?
Yeah.
That's either through who I know or my network.
Okay.
I mean, you know, so we have some really amazing formal advisors and non-formal advisors. and you know, a lot of it is it. So if you think about it, this is sort of an interesting inverse of what pipeline does, but the like me thing exists, right? So we do pattern matching, right? Which is why bias exists. That's what happens in our brains. But there is a piece of that sort of warm introduction and co-pitching with somebody else that takes the level down to like, we're really developing a relationship and your success is our success and really demonstrating that and how you do that. So for instance, some of our earliest customers were really from connections that we had that we were introduced to, as well as having people who would actually go and co-pitch with us, right? So some of our advisors are really well connected and they will come with us and co-pitch, and they don't really have much of, I mean, they're not getting a lot out of doing that. And because of that, it gives us more credibility.
Looking back in DU and your experience here, What can you tell other students that are thinking about starting companies about the experience, and you know, what kind of advice can you yield that this is possible inside the world of the University of Denver?
It is. You have to believe in yourself. Like that's, you know what I mean? I would say like no one can give that to you, and then do your homework. Right. I mean, we did a 100-page feasibility study and looked at pipeline every which way to actually make sure it was commercially viable. I mean, we loved the idea and the data models vetted out. I would also say also remember that it's in DU's interest for you to be successful. And so you should think about how you can make connections and make DU successful. And in so doing, they will help you be successful. And I would also look outside your college, right? So obviously I'm in the Daniels School of Business, but I've talked to people at the Women's College. I've talked to people at the engineering school, and really understanding where those, even the economics department, I mean, understanding where those different touch points are, I think are really important. you know, I think those are, I mean, the executive MBA program has a great structure for actually helping you to become an entrepreneur if you want to be. And then there's obviously a lot of other supports that can actually help you be successful.
Who are some of the professors that, you know, have really assisted along the path and you'd recommend other students reach out to if they're looking to start a company?
Carrie Plemons.
Love that guy.
That would be my number one. Yeah, Carrie's amazing. He's been definitely a huge support to us. And then Brad Greenwald is another person who's been really great. And Charlie Knight, who I don't think is actually teaching anymore, has also been supportive, as has Hart Williams, who's an alum and now a professor. So those are probably the four, and definitely Carrie, because he's got great experience, great energy, and a total can-do attitude.
That's awesome.
How has, the innovation entrepreneurship within Denver in general is crazy, you know, and just kind of this ecosystem. So how has that community really helped you guys or hurt you guys in that sense? I guess with both like pitches and just events and
yeah.
All that.
That's a good question. It's interesting. We've had some of that. So the entrepreneurship, I mean, we sort of sit in this interesting space where we are attractive to your kind of typical angels, but also impact investors because of what we do, which is an interesting space to be in, right? Because we, you know, fit within gender lens investing on all sorts of, you know, kind of multifaceted. And I think that's been really supportive. It's interesting because actually we are connected here in Denver, but we're actually also connected to a broader global network. So I was in New York a few weeks ago and I'll be in San Francisco in a couple of weeks. And so we've been connected there as well. In what we've been doing. So it's sort of a multifaceted connection into the network. I think as a female executive, one of the things that probably has helped me with Pipeline, not only becoming a female entrepreneur, but also because of our product, is the connections that I had within the women's leadership and women's organizations within Denver that have sort of been like another connection and augment to the technology startup community. So the Women's Foundation of Colorado, Elevate Denver, which is here, the LEED school has a women's council. So, you know, I was really involved in a couple of their launch events, and that's been really helpful. Women Who Start Up is founded here. So there's those kind of different connectors that have actually been helpful as well.
Well, Kataka, this has been absolutely wonderful for you to spend some time with us today. It's really inspiring to see Pipeline, the organization that you're building. And if there's any way the University of Denver and Project Excite can continue to help accelerate, you know, count us in. Not only is it an important issue and an important focus for business today, but it's inspiring for all of us to watch you lead this discussion, not only here in Colorado, but nationally. So congratulations on that. And as we close out, what are some parting bits of advice for those aspiring entrepreneurs that have got you to this point? And, you know, what really gets you up in the morning to make sure that, you know, you can continue to drive Pipeline?
Believe in yourself. Believe in yourself. Because if you believe in yourself, people will believe in you, right? I would say those things, never give up and always do your best. And I think the sort of core part of that is one of the things I have seen is that sometimes people want the road laid out for you of exactly what that's going to look like. And you're not going to get it you're not going to get it anyway, but you're certainly not going to get it in entrepreneurship. And so that belief and that sort of core center of who you are, I would just like keep driving forward. And I would also be willing to ask for help and pivot, right? Those are really important things. If you become too bullheaded on what you're doing, people will leave because you're unreasonable, right? So you know, also being open to advice and listening.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, Luke Johnson. You've been awesome with our student advisory board with Project Excite. And Kataka Roy, we couldn't be more appreciative with you spending some time on the Excite session show today. Really encourage you to continue to tune in to these incredible sessions where we really look at the intersection of technology, innovation, and entrepreneurship that will benefit our students, the community, and abroad. And most importantly, we'd love to thank Tech Studios and our partnership with the Cable Center, doing amazing things right here in the University of Denver campus, and not only telling the story of technology in our community, but helping us create these incredible podcasts to tell the stories of others. So this concludes this session, and we can't wait for the next. And thank you so much. Project Excite Sessions on the University of Denver campus is produced with our partner, the Cable Center. You can always visit upcoming episodes of Project Excite Sessions at projectexcite.org.